Today on The Morning Blend, we continue our weekly segment dedicated to American Catholic history. Tom and Noel Crow serve as our weekly teachers, giving us hidden gems and compelling stories of how Catholic Americans contributed to our nation by virtue of their faith. And who do we have today? Welcome back, you guys.
Thank you. Good to be back.
So today we're going to talk about Ruth McCulloch. And we decided that we would talk about her because maybe some of your listeners have seen sort of a rash of articles about her recently. Mm-hmm. And so we thought we'd talk a little bit about her, but especially because she was a friend of my mom.
Wow.
I know. I'm kind of freaking out. Like, I grew up around...
Did you babysit her kids?
I did babysit her kids sometimes. My mom is godmother to her youngest daughter. And now she's a servant of God, and it's just crazy.
And doesn't her husband teach at like Catholic University
Catholic
in D.C.?
Yeah.
He's teaching at Catholic U right now. When I knew them, they had moved to Worcester because he was teaching philosophy at Clark University in Worcester. Yeah, and then he's taught at Catholic
Worcester, Massachusetts, for those who don't remember, she's from Massachusetts.
Yes, Worcester, Massachusetts, yes. And he has taught at Catholic U, and he taught, I think, down at Ave Maria for a little bit, and now he's back at Catholic U. Right, exactly. But when I knew them, they were just, you know, he was just sort of a struggling professor at a Catholic college. They lived, as some people have read in the article, in the poor part of Worcester, but they had a really interesting story. Ruth was actually born in New Jersey, and her father was a Dutch immigrant. Her mother was from Scotland, I believe. And she eventually ended up at Harvard. She was brilliant, and she had so many talents. She was musically talented, a really clear mind, and able to make all kinds of arguments and just really interested in the truth. And that was something that really marked her and Michael and the relationship, that they were really interested in the truth. When they first met at Harvard, she was a TA. He was teaching a class or as an assistant professor or something like that. I forget exactly. But anyways, they first met and started dating. They were considered themselves atheists. They weren't practicing any religion, even though Ruth had never been Catholic. Michael had grown up in a Catholic family, but wasn't practicing at all. And they started on this just pursuit of the truth that led them to a Congregationalist church eventually, you know, to begin with, but they kept pursuing things and eventually were really interested in the Catholic Church. They just were like, that's where the truth was leading them. And it's really interesting that the Christian group they were with sort of organized a debate, and they were going to get a sort of recent Catholic convert to come and debate one of their, you know, the Christians from their group, and sort of convince them by the amazing arguments of the Christian from their group that Catholicism was not where they wanted to go. The problem was that the philosopher and recent Catholic convert that they had come for this debate, his name was Peter Kraft.
Game's up.
So yeah, that Whoops. Didn't work out so well.
Yeah.
That didn't work out so well. And so,
it did.
Well, yeah, for as planned, it didn't work out as planned by the group that started it. And so Ruth entered the church. Michael returned to practicing their faith. They got married in early 80s.
Yeah.
I should remember the dates. And 3 years later, they had their first child. And it was when they had their first child. Again, they were both philosophy types. They had entered the church. It was when they had their first child that Ruth really said, it's when she really became pro-life. It's when she really understood the tragedy of abortion and the falsity of the philosophy around abortion. And she became an enormous pro-life advocate. And I could, if I remember all the details, I could tell you all of the things that she did. But she worked with the Massachusetts Citizens for Life. While she was there, she worked with, I think, somebody she had met in her student days named Paul Swope, who has done a lot with advertising in terms of the pro-life message. But he was working at Massachusetts Catholics for Life at that time. And so she worked with him. She did a ton of debating. In fact, my mom told me that pro-abortion advocates would pull out. They would not debate her because she
Wow.
was that effective as a debater and that good. So she did a lot of debating. She had her own radio show at one point. She worked with local people to combat Planned Parenthood's plan for sex ed, which the Worcester school system was trying to get into the school system. And so she worked on a campaign to prevent that and was successful at doing that. From people from Massachusetts who might remember, we had a representative named Peter Blute, who was a pro-life member of Congress, and she worked on his campaign. And so she just did a ton of pro-life work. But at the same time, she was a homemaker. She was a mother. They lived in this, again, poor section of Worcester in a house that initially did not have running hot water. It was, and like I said, when she had her first child, she really became very pro-life. She went on to have six more children after that. Her fifth child, Thomas, died of SIDS at, I think, 7 weeks. You know, they just went in and he was dead in his crib. And that really focused her on heaven as well. That happened not long after they moved to Worcester for Michael to teach at Clark. And I think she and my mom bonded over the fact that they both lost children at that point, you know. So that was something that they had between them. Anyway, so in early 90s, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. The doctors actually missed it at first. She had a lump and went to them and they sort of said, don't worry about it. And it wasn't until she'd had her sixth child and was having so much trouble with nursing that she went back to the doctors and finally got them to do the necessary biopsy, and it came back as cancer. She had chemotherapy, went into remission. And when she was in remission, she actually conceived her seventh child. And the doctors told her, you shouldn't get pregnant. Oh. You shouldn't do this. But she was so pro-life and so dedicated to her family that she was very joyful to have this child. This child, Sophie, is the one who is my mom's goddaughter. So after Sophie was born, the cancer, you know, it spread. It had continued spreading until in 1998, late September, she died. But a couple of stories right before she died, a few months, it was really interesting. She told her husband, Michael, I think you need to marry again. The girls need a mother. So her oldest three living children are boys. And then she had these three daughters afterwards. You know, the girls need a mother. Sophie was very young still. And she said, the daughter of these family friends of ours, I think she would be a good wife for you.
Wow. Playing matchmaker at the end. That's amazing.
She was. And just under a year later, Michael married that woman that Ruth suggested that he should marry. And they're still married today. They have eight children of their own. And Catherine Ruth Bacalik is, in some circles, a famous name. She wrote a book recently called Hannah's Children. So a power in her own right. Michael has good choice in women. But I actually have been living in Holland, which is where Ruth's father is from, and came back in the end of July 1998 and was over at Ruth's house. They were having a pool party for all the kids. And I don't remember all the conversation we had, but at that point, you know, she had pointed me to John Henry Newman. Both she and Michael were big fans, shall we say, of John Henry Newman. And she was talking about him. And I just remember she pulled a book. It was an old book. I think it was Michael's, off the shelf. And she handed it to me and said, and I was like, are you sure? She's like, you should take it and read it. And it was Newman's autobiography.
Apologia pro vita sua. Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, this was just weeks before she died. But Ruth had a vision for a home where pregnant mothers could live. And I think this, you know, there weren't many, if there were any at all, there weren't very many at that point. I think now there are more of these that pregnancy centers will run to help women. But at the time, there really wasn't. This was a new thing. And she had this vision and she died before it became a reality. But I remember the night they had planned a fundraiser to get this started. They had identified a house and people were coming together. And the night of her funeral, they had planned, it had been planned already for a fundraiser for this. And everybody, there were, you know, all these people, family and friends in the Worcester area who went to her funeral that afternoon and that evening gathered at a fundraiser to put on and raise money for this home to happen that she had dreamed about. And it was just extremely beautiful. I know a lot of people have been reading about her recently. I didn't know that her cause had proceeded this far. I remember my mom telling me shortly after she died that there were many people who thought she had a chance to be canonized saint.
Wow.
And it's kind of exciting and shocking to to see these articles all of a sudden. So, but since they were recent, seemed like a good time to talk about a pro-life advocate.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for sharing your story. We have interviewed Michael recently on The Morning Blend, but that's great to be able to hear more about Ruth's life. If people want to learn more about what you do or listen to more of these amazing stories, where can they find you?
You can find us at AmericanCatholicHistory.org.